Arkansas tie to it. So I wanted to try to get him on. So I appreciate Big Baby running him down. And Chris Smith of Forbes joining us now in the Zone on the Revolution Hotline. Chris, how are you?
Good, thanks. How you guys doing?
Very good. Good. Very good. We've been talking a lot. It was a busy week here in the state. We had the Razorbacks helping themselves a little bit in the NCAA tournament. And Kentucky, a team we were just talking about, also did. We had the Sun Belt Conference tournament going on this weekend. So lots of good sports to get into. But I saw the story you wrote about John Calipari and what financial impact that could have on him if his team does not make the NCAA tournament. They certainly took a big step in the right direction on Saturday. But talk to me a little bit about the impact financially for John Calipari if they don't make the tournament.
Sure. It's actually pretty interesting. Calipari has up to about $850,000 in potential bonuses, and $700,000 of that huge bonus potential comes from tournament play. So if Kentucky misses the tournament outright, which, you know, is still a possibility, though it looks after beating Florida, they have a much better chance, he has a lot of money that he could potentially lose. So obviously he's going to need some tournament success once they get there in order to rack up all of that bonus money. But missing the tournament is definitely a big blow to his earning potential.
Do you have any insight, I guess, or any thoughts on what it'll take for them to get in? Have you done any projections on that? I don't know if that's your cup of tea, but
yeah, it's not exactly my specialty. I can tell you, from a fan's perspective and just from following sport this year, it looks like I would say, they're obviously right on the bubble now, and if they pick up even one win in the tournament this week, I think that their chances got to be pretty good.
I would think so as well. Chris Smith joining us from Forbes magazine. We're talking about John Calipari. So I don't know if you've looked at it. I'm assuming you have, as far as what his bonuses look like once he gets a little further down the road. What if he makes a Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, a Final Four?
Sure. Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, once he gets to each of those levels, he gets $100,000. Makes it to the Final Four, he gets $150,000. And if they win the whole thing, he gets another $350,000.
Wow.
So obviously a ton of money in play. And if they win the SEC tournament, which, is also another possibility, he gets another $50,000 just from that.
Are his bonuses similar to those of other coaches at elite programs, or is he a little out of whack as far as that goes?
His are a little bit bigger, I think. You'll mm-hmm. see that, especially in having so many different bonuses within the tournament, is also a little unique. But generally speaking, a lot of these coaches get major bonuses, especially making deep tournament runs, making Final Four, winning the championship. One of the interesting ones at Ohio State, Thad Matta, if he makes it to the Final Four, he gets an extra year added to his contract automatically.
Oh, wow.
That's one of the unique bonuses out there that I think is real cool and obviously worth a ton. So that happened last year. Yeah, tacked on the extra year.
Wow. Well, for
that's pretty unique.
For Arkansas State's perspective, it's a good thing they didn't have that deal for John Brady when he was at LSU, or he might still be there. Chris Smith joining us from Forbes. We're talking, I guess, the business of sports when it comes to the SEC. And yeah, I would say if I'm John Calipari, I got a pretty good draw. I mean, they play the winner of Arkansas and Vanderbilt, and as much as I hate to say that, I mean, even though Arkansas just knocked them off, it'll be like a home game.
Yep.
And I don't know if you've ever been to an SEC tournament, but it's typically it's wall-to-wall blue.
It's blue.
Yeah, no, I believe it. That's what I've heard.
So, on another note, NFL's best bargain free agents in 2013, and I sort of had a passing interest in this, I guess, and then I got to a name that raised my eyebrows a little bit in running back Peyton Hillis, former Razorback, who has had you want to talk about a roller coaster ride in the NFL. He's a guy that certainly has a lot of skills, did not have a very good year this last season, and some intriguing choices he's made on the advice of his agent, who maybe didn't give him the best advice, I guess some would say. What are your thoughts on him, and who are some of the other guys you're looking at as good bargains this year?
Well, Peyton Hillis, I think that you're definitely right that he has the skill set. I showed a few years ago in Cleveland, he's a big guy but still can operate as an every-down back. He can catch passes out of the backfield. So you definitely have a talented guy. And then injuries in his last season in Cleveland, and then last year obviously playing behind Jamal Charles, isn't a great way to get a lot of touches. So he's sort of been flying under the radar. But I think, he goes into the right system. He's potentially still a very skilled running back. Top talent, and you're getting them for a pretty bargain price, considering, especially because there's a lot of other names out there. Reggie Bush is on the market, Steven Jackson. So Peyton Hillis, I think, is one of those guys where his name might not be getting many headlines, but you're getting a skilled guy for not as much money.
Were you at all surprised by the Flacco deal, or was that about what you were expecting? Were you expecting him to be the highest paid guy at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think that was pretty much to be expected. I don't know if it was a smart deal or whether or not Baltimore should have done it, but definitely something that, I mean, it was hard for them not to after the postseason success he's had the last 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was certainly a calculated risk. Who was the holdout on getting the deal done prior to the season? Because at this point, I'm sure Baltimore, if they could go back in time, would have hammered that out prior to the start of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was a little bit of both that, you know, Baltimore wanted to get that one last year and see what he could do. Obviously, he proved himself. And I think that, you know, Flacco has shown time and again, both on the field and in speaking off of it, that he has a ton of confidence and thinks that he has the skills and that he is, you know, top quarterback in the league. So I have no doubt that he was looking forward to proving all of his detractors wrong last year.
What about the Tom Brady deal? And I don't know how much you've looked into the ins and outs of that, but there was, I guess we all were like, oh, wow, what a great deal. He's not taking max money, and that's, you know, what a nice job, Tom. He's trying to help his team. Then I saw another report that maybe it was a little more self-serving and a little more beneficial to him than maybe it looked like at the outset. Can you give me the ins and outs of that and exactly how that worked for Brady?
Sure. I mean, I don't really know all the details, but what really happened was they gave him a ton of money. I think it was about $30 million in the form of a signing bonus. So, you know, that's money that gets prorated over the length of the contract. So that way it helps their salary cap. And obviously, you know, people were giving Brady a lot of credit for helping the team by opening up all that salary cap room, which, you know, obviously can be also construed as a selfish move because he wants to win. But I think that he's not losing any money. And as we've seen, you know, his last few contracts where he's done similar things, he helps the team out by opening up a lot of space under the cap. And then a few years later, they can basically tear up the deal and make a new one. So I think, you know, the team's going to do right by Tom Brady. He'll get paid in the long run. And in the short run, he's doing his best to make sure his team remains competitive and he can keep winning.
I'm curious about the tax ramifications about that, Chris, too. If you get that lump sum check at the beginning in the signing bonus, or if you spread that money out over the life of your contract. And I guess if they're paying it out over the life of the contract, maybe it's not going to work the same way as if you got a chunk of money at the beginning.
Right, and it depends. I'm not exactly sure how his works, but sometimes when the signing bonuses are broken down over years, he can get more in 1 year than in another. So I'm not entirely sure what the details are there, though.
Okay.
Chris, real quick, Tom Brady's favorite target the past few years, Wes Welker. Reports are he's staying, he's going. What kind of money is he looking at if he stays or if he goes? What do you think a team would be willing to pay for him?
To be honest, I don't know, because I think that there's a little bit of a mystery of, you know, what Wes Welker can do without Tom Brady. He's become, you know, this elite target, leading the league in receptions many years. But I think a lot of people think that comes from Tom Brady and Tom Brady's reliance on Wes Welker. So I think if he stays, he'll definitely get a significant deal. Patriots fans love him. He's a major draw, sells jerseys. So I think that he'd be paid pretty much what he's getting now. What was his deal? I'm blanking on his numbers. But I think if he goes elsewhere, that it'll be interesting to see. If you have a team that really needs a receiver, sort of empty and downfield, you could definitely sign a major deal. You know, big name, one of the most popular wide receivers in the game right now, has the numbers, has been consistently great. So there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to command a major deal on the market.
Chris Smith of Forbes joining us in the Zone on the Revolution Hotline. Let me ask you about another guy you had mentioned in your story, Matt Moore. Sure. And Matt Moore was a guy that was featured, at least for a while, until he lost his starting job on Hard Knocks on HBO, which I don't know. I guess I haven't watched him play a lot. But he's about as likable a guy, and I thought he handled the demotion very classy. And, of course, when you got cameras on you, maybe you handle a little bit better than you would normally. But he's a guy that you mentioned as a guy that might be a pretty good bargain for somebody looking for a quarterback.
Yeah, definitely. I actually thought, you know, he was a bit of like a tragic hero on Hard Knocks because it was, you know, his job. He earned it the year before, put up great numbers, and then the rookie comes waltzing in and takes his job, and he had to start backing him up again. So I definitely have some sympathy for Matt Moore, and I think that he's shown, you know, in that one chance as a starter that he's has the ability to play. He was, you know, not really top-tier quarterback, but definitely above average. He had a completion percentage over 60%. He ranked, like, 12th in the league, I think, in passer rating. So he's definitely got the talent, and I think that a lot of people associate him with his first few years where he would show up in spot starts and throw a bunch of interceptions when he was really young and hadn't been given a chance to develop in a system. So he's one of those guys who's on the market now, could probably be had for backup money, you know, you don't have to break the bank to bring him in. And I think given the chance in the right system, he could definitely thrive and be a quarterback who can lead a team to winning games and even the playoffs.
Chris, big broadcast news last week. News Corp going to put on Fox Sports 1. It'll be a direct rival to ESPN. What do you think the impact is, if anything, to ESPN, and what's the potential for success here?
I think there's definitely potential for success just because live sports programming is such an important thing these days. You know, it's the one thing that you can't DVR and watch later, or that people won't DVR and watch later. So getting into that live sports arena is definitely one of the ways to be successful in the television market. Whether or not it's going to impact ESPN, I have my doubts. I think that ESPN is obviously, you know, behemoth. They basically have a monopoly on sports broadcasting. So I think it won't be for a few years, if at all, for Fox Sports 1 to start challenging them. I mean, just look at the NBC Sports Network. They rebranded the Versus Network, and they're struggling to get programming. I mean, they have some hockey, but it's not enough to really compete with ESPN, and I think we'll see a similar thing with Fox Sports 1.
Chris, I only ask you this because it's about to be tournament time, where you went to school and who you're rooting for in the NCAA.
Sure. I went to Hamilton College, which is a D3 school, so not much in the hometown rooting department for the tournament.
Who'd you grow up rooting for from a major Division I?
Mostly Rutgers. I'm from New Jersey, so that was the team to pull for if you were from New Jersey and didn't have any ties anywhere else. So that was one, and then St. John's because my mom went there.
Okay,
those are sort of the schools. So obviously, neither of those is a big powerhouse. This year, I'm not entirely sure actually who I'm rooting for. If Kentucky makes it, I mean, I would like to see them do well just because there's so many, you know, young guys, you know, fighting adversity. And obviously, from a, you know, job perspective, writing about Kentucky is always great. And so much money involved there, and everyone's always watching them.
Considering you're from the Northeast, I was going to ask about your thoughts on the Catholic schools breaking away from the Big East and what you think the success will be, I guess, for each and what's left of the Big East. And my biggest concern on this is that they don't name the league's stupid names, because that's always irritating. When the Big Ten went Legends and Leaders, I was like, really? I mean, if you pulled it out of a hat, that would have been about as bad a naming choice as you could have made. So I just hope they don't screw that part of it up.
Now, apparently, the old Big East is looking to rename. I think they said the America 12. Which I think, you know, sounds kind of goofy. And any time you put a number in your conference name, especially with a conference like that that's been seeing people come and go constantly, you're only asking for more trouble there.
You're right. It is.
Did the Catholic group select a name yet?
Yeah, so the Catholic group actually
got
the right
Big East?
To keep the Big East.
Okay.
And they're going to keep the conference tournament at Madison Square Garden. And actually, I wrote a quick article last week about how they get to keep the tournament units. That's how the NCAA distributes its postseason revenue, based on how many games each conference has played over the last few years in the tournament. And so normally when schools leave a conference, the conference keeps the units, but the Catholic Seven schools are allowed to keep their units. So they'll get paid something like $7.25 million next year just off of tournament games they've played over the last five seasons, which is a pretty big steal, considering that, you know, there's schools that are branching off from a pretty major conference.
Yeah, they came out pretty good on that deal, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And now, and I think they're also getting a TV deal. I think the latest was they were negotiating with Fox Sports 1, actually.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
Why not? Makes perfect sense. Well, as we said last week, the craziest thing is the Catholics now have their own league, but they don't have a pope.
And that will be the world we live in.
Yeah, probably won't be the case by the end of the week, but that's the case today.
Yeah, we'll be watching that close. I guess that starts tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I guess so. So they were busy preparing for that building. What did I say? They were building a...
The chimney.
The chimney deal?
Oh, yeah.
This is crazy.
The white smoke.
It's hilarious. Yeah. I love it.
That place is going to go nuts whenever that white smoke comes out.
It's going to be a party at the Vatican, my friend. It's going to be beautiful. Chris, thanks so much for coming on. We'll hopefully get you on again. Great stuff.
Great.
We appreciate you.
Me.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right, you too.